The Disciplined Investor Podcast is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. Rates, of course, are subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Never let a good crisis go to waste. That's what they say. $900 billion down payment approved. A look back on 2020 and what may be in store for 2021. All this and much more on episode number 695 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. What a year that was, and what do we have in store for 2021 and into the future? I mean, every single headwind was knocked down. Every tailwind was accentuated. We know what's happening. We talked about this, about the stimulus. We talked about the money pouring into markets. Good lessons learned to really teach us that, well, essentially nothing fails. Nothing's allowed to fail. And as Winston Churchill famously said, never let a good crisis go to waste. Welcome to the last show of, this is not the last show. This is the first show, now that I think about it, the first show of 2021. I'm your host, Andrew Horowitz. I'm founder of Horowitz & Company. That's an investment advisory firm, financial planning, wealth management. We go by many names. Whatever really suits your fancy, we basically help you reach your level of financial independence through investment management, advisory, et cetera. So I want to let you know, for those of you that are new listeners, maybe picking up podcasts for the first time, maybe this podcast for the first time, that we do this on a regular basis. This is not just all theory and speculation in terms of, well, if we were really investing, this is what we would do. We do this every day. That's what we do. And then we come and discuss a lot of these issues in the podcast. And we do it for educational purposes. We do it for a review, for learning, for both you and for me, because I bring on some great guests and talk about all sorts of topics and discuss things that maybe weren't right there available if I didn't do this. So it's a multi-part process of learning, of education, of information, and hopefully you'll get a lot out of it. I thought we would take a look back on 2020 and the results, which are pretty remarkable. I think when we talk about 2020, we have to agree that animal spirits are showing through, alive and well, and there's so many reasons why this is the case, and so many possibilities as to why people who really never invested before decided that, hey, this is the year that I'm going to start putting money away. I'm going to get involved. I mean, maybe that was you. Maybe for a long time, you're like, I don't know, market valuations, and I'm worried about this, or, you know, I really don't want to put money into gold or Bitcoin or whatever it was, right? And you're like, this year, you said, hey, it's time. But a lot of people still hadn't for a long period of time. And it seems like this animal spirit has been renewed, released in 2020. And I think one thing is for sure, that we know, all of us, that sitting on the sidelines isn't going to do it, right? With low rates and not many options for your money to make money other than you doing something with it, being active with it. That doesn't mean trading. That means just making a decision. Because a lot of people are wondering, what are we going to do with my money? My money for my future. It used to be in the back old, in the dark ages, that you can actually put money into a savings account and earn a decent level of interest on it. And therefore, without any risk, have that money working for you in the background as you're working to make money. You make the money, you save the money, you put into savings, and then you also invest in stocks and bonds and real estate and all the other things out there. But these days, we've talked about this, there's really not that opportunity to do so. I mean, right now, you got to believe that there's not a lot of people out there saying, oh, you know, markets are really well valued at this point. I don't think so. I think what we're really finding is that most people, you know, listen, there's a few people that are just, you know, just pedal to the metal, balls to the walls. I'm investing. I'm not going to look at it. I'm going to invest in the most aggressive thing that I can. And hopefully long term, in 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 years, it's going to pay off really nicely. But I think generally people right now, from what I've been talking in my conversations that I've been talking with people from all walks of life, not just clients, not just people that I know, people I don't know that have wanted to talk about investing, they're kind of cautious. They don't think there's a great value in the market. Some are even worried. But on the other hand, the thought of not being invested and being out is just as terrifying to many. So maybe it's this FOMO, this fear of missing out. Possibly it's a level of capitulation. And maybe there's a mix of some of that going on. But whatever the case, I think a lot of people are agreeing that there's got to be a better place for cash. Because we know the cash isn't yielding anything. We know that, and this is not much you can make on it. It's actually going, if we believe the current inflation numbers, well, no, you're still making a little bit of money on it, but really, depending on where you have it, but generally speaking, you're going backwards because of the real rate of return on your money that's sitting there at a 0.1 interest rate, even if there's a slight level of inflation, is actually going backwards and your dollar is being devalued by the constant move of the Feds, et cetera, of the Fed. Not the Feds. Sounds like the FBI. The Fed, the central banks. And a lot of people are still wondering what to do. And a big question I think that's being asked is, you know, when is all this going to change? What's that prompt? What's that mechanism? When things are good, do you find yourself saying right now that, hey, I can't invest now? You know, markets are doomed. I mean, wow, I've seen it before, and it just can't stay up like this. And then you get the other side, right, where markets start to crash or come down or correct and crack, and you say, well, I can't invest now. It's going lower. So you constantly have your money on the sidelines, right? You're constantly thinking, I can't do it. I'm paralyzed by no matter what happens. And to think about that for a second, seriously, just for a moment, New Year's resolution or commitments, think about this for a second. And we talked about this item and kind of skirted around it in the past, but are you thinking that no matter what happens, it's not a good time? It's never a good time to invest. Never that Goldilocks moment. It's either too hot, it's too cold, it's never just right. What is your Goldilocks moment? Do you have one? You just use it. Maybe instead of using some kind of systematic or scientific or mathematical model, you're using that old gut model. It just doesn't feel right. You know, I invest when it feels right or it feels good. How's that working out? If in fact you've been on the side with when markets are doing really well, you don't think it's going to last. And when markets are doing poorly, you think it's going to get worse. How's that working out? Now, I'm not saying you have to be all in, but I'm also saying you don't have to be all out. And I've been pounding this over the last several months. And I got to say thank you to all the people who have sent in those wonderful emails. And we talked about this one foot in, one foot out concept and how to dollar cost average. And I want to thank you for, what would be the best way, for reaffirming my commitment to this. Because you have had a lot of success. You've told me about it. You've done something other than just being absolutely glued to the sideline. So if you're using just your gut and not being able to move and you have a little bit of negativity, you know what I'm talking about, that just creeps into your mindset on a regular basis as you're watching this, I think you need to do something. And here's what it is. So going back a number of years, one of the reasons that I had written my first book, and I have a second book that I wrote also, but is I was taught early on to write things down, especially goals. You know, thinking back on one of my first goals when I entered the financial services industry, I remember plain as day. I had wanted to get that nice, brand new, shiny BMW 325. That was the point that I said, well, I've reached a level of success once I got there. And I wanted a Rolex watch. That was two goals, now I think about, that I wrote down that I wanted. And every day I would look at my to-do list, things that I would want, but also my long-term goals of what I wanted to achieve. And it was that BMW 3 Series, a 325, and a Rolex. I was in my early 20s. And again, that was the kind of first goal. That was that first level that I thought, oh, if I got to that point, I would be then considered successful. Well, here's the story. I finally got to the point that I could afford that 325, but somewhere along the line, once I was able to get there, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I really want that, to be honest with you. I kind of had a couple of things that I decided along the way, and I said, you know what? That's a great car. I'm glad I could do it. I have achieved that goal that I can afford, because my goal was really that I could afford to buy that car. That was my goal at that point. It wasn't really get the car. It was I could afford to buy it, or at least that's how I remember it. So I decided, you know what? I don't want that car. I want to do something else. And I kind of changed up my goal. I got something that was a little bit more economical and I felt really good about. But I did get the Rolex. Here's the point. It's not whether I got the Rolex or a fancy car. That has nothing to do with it, because you could substitute any particular goal in there for your future that you want. It could be something really fancy. It could be something very basic. But the point is that you want to actually have some goals. You want to have a concrete goal and step to get there. You need to write it down on paper where you can reference it on a regular basis. And this will keep you from making very bad mistakes. Now, you could take this discussion, by the way, and kind of wrap this around the investment process as well. What is your process? What is your structure? What is the way that you're going to invest? When am I in? When am I out? And when it comes to your money, what's your goal? You have to ask yourself. Is it buying a house? Is it buying a second home? Is it just simply a vacation? Financial freedom and security? Maybe it's college tuition for your kids, or maybe paying off your loans. What is it, and how are you going to get there are the questions that you need to ask yourself, especially now. Here we are in 2021. We know all the mistakes. All of us made mistakes in 2020. There's a laundry list of mistakes that were made in 2020, right? Well, how do we self-correct? We can easily just go into 2021 with the same exact process. Okay, I'm going to start going to the gym and I'm going to eat less. I'm not going to have as much alcohol. I'm going to stop smoking. I don't know, whatever your particular basic everyday resolution is. And then somewhere in February or March, it's like, oh, yeah, well, I tried. Give me that hamburger. Give me that smoke. I'll take it with a beer, please. You know, but if you have it written down, somehow you are committing to yourself. You're putting it down and you're creating a level of just a level of commitment that's a little bit different. You have to be and find a way that you can follow your dreams and goals and follow your commitments and your outward desires without something getting in the way. And if you have a way to reference that and then become accountable to it, and we're talking about finance here. I'm not talking about your diet. I brought it up as an idea. I'm not talking about your use of smoking and nicotine, your habits. I'm talking about finance. Because again, this is about what your goals are for the future. What's going to take for you to succeed? Write it down. Figure out a way to get there. And possibly enlist the help of others, people that you trust, that will help you hold your feet to the fire and stay on track. Or maybe even outsource the whole operation. You know, some people, we'll go back to the diet discussion, will actually go and say, okay, Nutrisystem, I'll take all your meals and I'm going to hire a personal trainer. And those things will help you get to your goal. You don't necessarily have to do it on your own. Whatever it takes, as first, the starting point is all in your hands. You have to initiate it because nobody could force you to do it. Listen, this is your time. Let's get going. Goldilocks, be damned. Take control of your future. And I know many of you have had a pretty spectacular year on the financial front. But there are also many excuses why 2020 could have held you back. I mean, again, a very long list of excuses. But let's not make that mistake in 2021. I'm here to motivate you, to get you going, to make sure that you take that step. If nothing else, what I want you to do is write down, I will commit to my future financial security. And then fill a few things out. Take 10 minutes, just 10 minutes, and write down a few things that you could be doing. Let's not make the mistakes in 2021 and the years to come that we made back in 2020. In fact, we're going to take a look at some of the things that actually occurred and some of the incredible performance in 2020, a year that most of us would have been thinking that, well, I'm not involved in this because things are pretty bad out there. But the markets were resilient, even what we may have thought initially of what how and how this was going to play out. Now, before we get to that, this whole discussion of the yearly returns, and I have all these classifications I want to look at, I want to discuss Interactive Brokers. They've been a great underwriter of the show, and I want to tell you something that you need to know about. I mentioned at the top of the show that Interactive Brokers charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. And what's interesting is that Interactive Brokers clients can also earn extra income by lending their fully paid shares of stock. You could join Interactive Brokers clients from over 200 countries and territories in investing stocks, options, futures, funds, and bonds globally. You can minimize your cost to maximize your returns. Now, understand that, of course, rates are subject to change, but you need to check this out because there's a lot that's going on in this quick discussion. I want you to go to ibkr.com/compare. You can see exactly what other brokers are charging for margin and what you could actually get if you are with Interactive Brokers, plus what the overall opportunities are on with regard to lending your stock, et cetera, where you can make some extra income. Go to ibkr.com/compare. So we're talking about this year that a lot of people want to forget, with all the problems and heartache and all of the issues regarding it. And it was unfortunately a year that will be remembered by all of us for a very long time, right? There's just no question about that. And there's going to be some, I do believe there's going to be some very deep psychological scars that are going to be embedded with us, and that's going to sway some of us. And that's why I'm talking about, you know, writing down things and making sure that you have a clear head when you're thinking through things so that you're not making decisions in the heat of the moment. And this is going to be a process. But at the same time, with all of the misery that went on throughout 2020, there were some bright spots. And in particular, we know this. It was the financial markets. I know. Hard to believe for many that this could be going on as it is. And we talked about why, and we talked about this $900 billion stimulus program where people already are starting to get their $600 checks automatically deposited to their bank accounts. I've seen it. I've seen it already. People are getting their money. We've seen that the PPP programs, we've seen the Main Street Lending Program, we've seen the low-cost interest rates by the Fed and the central banks around the world, stimulus pouring in from left, from right, from front, from center, from behind, from underneath. Everywhere we're getting this incredible insulation in the markets, and a lot of that is starting to trickle down into the markets, helping many companies earn a lot more money, not to mention the fact that, of course, we had low tax rates on a corporate basis to begin with. All of that comes into play. So I want to go through some of the results just to make sure we create a mark in time. We're going to create a historical reference to where we are so everybody understands just what happened throughout the year last year. And with the drop that we saw in February and March of last year, that massive and very quick correction of every single asset class, the same thing is true on the back end, the mirror, the reflection of that moving forward. When we saw that the central banks and the government stepped in. So we're going to look at some of these U.S. Rates of return, first of all, and some of the world. But the first of all is, amazingly, U.S. stocks on the Russell 3000, that's the small, the mid, the large caps, returned about 20% for the year. Now, if you were betting in the, first of all, in 2019, at the end of 2019, would have you expected that we'd had such an outside year? Maybe, maybe not. Moving into February with all the announcements of all that we were seeing in China and in Europe, would you have thought we're going to have an outside year to the upside? Probably not. But here we are. So we closed the year with global stocks, ex-US, up 11%. Even bonds on a global basis, up 9.2%. U.S. bonds up 7.4%. And U.S. real estate down 6.31%. So it wasn't all peaches and cream and strawberries and whipped cream. No. There was definitely some problems here. But if we get down to the S&P 500, rounding these off, the S&P 500 was up 16% for the year. The NASDAQ 100, the tech-heavy, the biotech-heavy NASDAQ 100, up 43%. 43%. That's just remarkable. Now, not all of those were directly, you know, the stocks in there were directly related to the pandemic. In other words, it wasn't all the Zooms and everything that was the stay-at-home plays. No, it was a lot of general backdrop and helping out of the material change in how we work in general, not only for the pandemic, but for what is expected to be the foreseeable future. So that was an incredible run. Now, valuations are a little bit tippy-toppy, a little bit to the smoking edge of the high side, but that doesn't mean they can't continue for some time. I am still of the mindset that we're seeing a little bit of excess speculation, some irrational exuberance in some areas, and I don't know if we're going to be able to maintain, especially come next week when we see the Georgia runoff. If we do have the results being the Democrats retain the two Senate seats and how that then will move along with taxes for corporations, which is one of the areas that is being targeted by the Biden administration. It will be a lot easier for them to get roll back the tax cuts and roll back some of the regulation. So rolling back the regulation rollbacks. And there's a lot of talk about breaking up the big companies. Again, they don't seem to be bothered too much by this. But the NASDAQ up 43%, small caps up 19%. And that was really on a late November, December rally because they were just getting smoked throughout the year. A lot of that is the regional banks and some of the companies that are inside the small caps just outperformed as the yield curve started getting a little bit better and spreading out a little bit. And we got a bit of a widening in the yield curve, and that helped out the banks incredibly for that run that we saw in November, December. And then on top of that, you have kind of a reversion to the mean trade that was going on towards the back end of the year with value and growth. Bitcoin up about 300%. Silver up 48% for an incredible run for that commodity. Gold up 25%. And the U.S. dollar down about 7% against a basket of currencies for the year 2020. Right there, it tells you a lot about what's going on. The U.S. dollar down has been an incredible tailwind for multinationals, for alternative assets, for Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, for silver, for gold. That has been a great play. And now, of course, the question is, you know, what else is driving that? It could be the idea that there is inflation coming. Maybe inflation in the form of actually prices going up because of supply demand and problems with the supply chain. Or it could be just the continual and nonstop debasement of the currency, because we are going to have a rate at the emergency levels till 2023, which is just astounding. Here is where the U.S. stocks get interesting. We're going to talk about the Russell indices for a second here. U.S. large cap, which is like the tech and the healthcare, up 39% for the year. While on the other side of the Russell 1000, okay, the value only up 1.5% for the year. Mid caps, next level down in terms of total market cap. Mid caps were up 35% for the year. Mid cap values were up 1.75% for the year. So we're seeing a little bit better in that area, slightly. I mean, 0.25%, it's not much. Small cap growth is interesting. Small cap growth up 35%. Small cap value up 5.5%. So it looks like towards the end of the year, those small regional banks really got the money plowed into them, poured into them. And that was that reversionary trade. I still believe there is a lot of opportunity in the value side. I know we were kind of pretty wrong for most of the year, not all the year, but most of the year last year. I would have thought, number one, value would have withstood some of this downstroke a little bit better, which it did not, primarily because everything went into the, not only were the markets getting sold, but when they were being bought, they weren't being bought on the value side. And the growth was getting all the money. So the recovery didn't really take hold until, again, November, December for a lot of the value side. And that is shown up pretty well because in the value side is also energy. It's financials, real estate, utilities. Let me go through the sector snapshot as of the end of the year for the S&P 500 sectors. I'm going to round these, okay? Just so we have the numbers here. We're going to start from top to bottom, largest performer, best performer to the least and the worst performer. Technology up 42% for the year. Consumer cyclical, which is fascinating, up 28% for the year. That's retail in an environment where we went into double digit unemployment rates to where we are now at 7%. We'll see an unemployment number next week, by the way, the first week of the year, first Friday of the month is going to be the unemployment numbers, probably looking at about where we are. Maybe there's some estimates that are showing a little bit of a increase of the potential of the unemployment rate due to some of the slowing and a little bit of the tapering off of what we saw towards the end of the year. But still, consumer cyclicals, the people spent the money they received from unemployment, the money they received from employment, the money they received from the stimulus. And they were really ravenous in certain areas. I mean, you look at companies like a Wayfair, you look at a company like an Amazon in terms of retail. And even with the death of the mall, we're not seeing that much of a concern for people investing in things like the department stores and the big box. Big returns here and there towards the last few months in that area. Communication services up 25% for the year. Materials, which there's this thought that the number one, we're going to see a renaissance in infrastructure development and infrastructure money coming through, as well as the fact is one of the best ways to stimulate an economy is to figure out the way that we can actually get people back to work. And what better way to have, here we go, shovel-ready activities and jobs available. And we're talking about another stimulus bill down the road and probably the multiple trillions of dollars to fix the roads, the aging bridges, the tunnels, the railroads, you know, maybe make a high-speed end-to-end California to, I don't know, Virginia railroad that is, state-of-the-art and really on a brand-new track. Now, that will take years to build, of course. But what better way to fund a recovery, get people back to work, than to build? And where do you get the things that you need? Well, it's the materials sector. So there's been this discussion of that. And you've also had an incredible run in the real estate area of in the residential sector. Now, you also had a significant amount of commercial that was being built already. A lot of those projects have halted, have stopped. But what we have now is this migration from the New Yorks, the Californias, even places around the Midwest and northern areas of the country. From a weather standpoint, from a rural standpoint, from a city standpoint, getting the hell out. What a better time to move to Florida. That's all I keep hearing. And people are taking everybody up and they're like, let's go to Miami. Always want to live in Miami, right? I mean, why should I stay here? I'm stuck in my house anyway. If I go to Miami, I'll be stuck in my house. But at least if I go outside, it'll be warm in January. So we're seeing that the materials area is really benefiting from all this extreme amount of change of our desire of where we want to live, how we want to live, and what we want to live in and around. Healthcare up 10.2% for the year. Obviously helped by a significant amount of technology or advancement, I'll say, in the area of course, the warp speed COVID vaccine testing, et cetera, as well as just a general thought that this is going to be an incredible time for healthcare. Some of the areas of CRISPR and mRNA, as well as all sorts of places that are helping the aging population stay at least healthy or at least alive, I guess. Industrials up 8%. Consumer defense up 6.3%. Now, consumer defense, that's kind of interesting, the consumer defensive area. That's like your staples. You would think it was a lot more with all the hoarding of toilet paper and Clorox. Clorox had a great year. We owned that for a while for our TDIMG portfolios. But, that consumer defensive area, again, the old name was staples, you would have thought would really have done a lot better as people were just digging in and bunkering and hunkering down, but only up 6.35%. Not a lot of ability to really adjust your margins, I suppose, on that. That's really what's driving that. Utilities, as interest rates have gone down, you would have thought would did well, but, you know, you have that backdrop of a lot of people being unemployed and the concern about, you know, hey, what's going to happen with the utilities? Are they going to be able to pay their bills? I mean, we have a rent abatements and other things that are being postponed. But also there's some concern about maybe utilities hit their high stride and they're going to start being questioned as an area of benefit, even though they pay a high and a good dividend. Utilities down 4.5% for the year. Financials down 5.5%, coming up from a big hole like I discussed in the last couple of months. Real estate down 6%. And the big loser of the year as oil is being viewed as, something that we will remember that we used sometime in the past when we are out 10 or 15 years from now, as the electric vehicle revolution changes the way that we view fossil fuels. And the energy companies, even though energy and oil prices have come up, oil prices were down very significantly this year, obviously curtailing and hurting the profitability of many of the energy companies. And then the realization of a lot of people saying, you know, if we are going to have incredible advancements in battery technology and harnessing alternative energy and green energy, and if the new administration with the Biden administration is pounding the desk on doing away with carbon emissions and, look at our green footprint and the Green Deal and the New Deal and the Old Deal and, you know, looking at really reducing down our dependence on oil from foreign countries, which we have, but also the fracking and looking more towards renewable energy in the form of solar and wind and nuclear and turbine and you name it. And that has become a worldwide calling. Now, whether you believe it's good or bad or doesn't matter, it's happening. We are seeing a significant amount of movement in this area. And what's really cool that you're seeing is that there has been an upswell of advancements. You remember, you know, you have calculators. Like I have a calculator, with a solar calculator, they call it, or a light, light charge. It doesn't have to be solar. It could be fluorescent. Light charges this little calculator I have on my desk. I've had this for 25 years. Same calculator. That's not the same solar that we're using these days to harness the power and the energy of the sun and able then to take it and store it. We're not talking about powering these calculators, although it works. We're talking about powering cities. It's not just cars. So there's something to be said there. I mean, that's why we saw such an incredible run on many of the solar stocks this year. Look at the TAN, T-A-N ETF, that has had a great run. And we've had a few of those in our portfolios, and I got to tell you, they've done pretty well. We closed out some of those positions towards the end of the year, but really pretty amazing. Now, when we look at the overall, obviously what we've seen is a summation, I think, for 2020 that we have to really recognize, and I believe that we can confidently say that for 2020, a rising tide raises all ships. Some of the areas in the market and the financial landscape really didn't matter. Some of the things that happened were kind of like just blown off. The markets were skewed towards technology, innovation. Was and is priced at a premium. And speculation is peaking. Over the last year, we saw this massive losses and then gains in companies that were on the verge of bankruptcy. Remember some of these names? I mean, you gotta probably look at JCPenney and look at Hertz and look at all these names that are on the bulk of the verge of the edge of going under. But meanwhile, people were buying it hand over fist, like, oh, they're going to come out of bankruptcy. I'm like, okay, what happens to the common stock once that happens? Again, you know, we could say a lot of things and kind of, you know, shake our finger at the retail investor that's not doing their homework on this. But you know what? They made some money doing it. So if it's only price that pays, okay. If it's long-term fundamentals and long-term technicals, And the idea that we want to have a good return over time, probably not the best thing to buy a bankrupt company. I probably agree with that, right? And the new flavor of the day, what do we have? Again, with the speculation that is really peaking, we have SPACs. Talked about this a lot on DH Unplugged. Special purpose acquisition companies that I would dare say most have no idea what is actually going on inside of there, if they're investing, if they're doing good management, if what they bought is a good deal, if what's happening in the fees are really good. I bet most people that are buying these SPACs, I believe, are just buying them because of one reason. They're SPACs. And I heard that, well, you can make money investing in these SPACs. And a lot of this free money, the stimulus has been trickling or actually pouring in and finding its way into markets. And this bullish and ultra or uber bullish outlook by analysts and economists that 2021 and moving to the future is going to be even a better years. It's kind of like, what a great thing this virus is. And this pandemic has unleashed all this excess money that's going to flow right into the markets and the dollar moving down. All the things are set up. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that. I think that you have to be aware of what is on the other side. The mountain of debt. I mean, we can't not talk about that. If we're talking about all this money, it's not like just instantly just appeared from somewhere and was granted. No. It was created with historic levels of debt. And what we have now is a situation where we're going to pass that down and we're going to stymie growth for the next number of decades unless we get this taken care of, which would mean something that you don't want to hear. Higher taxes. That's the only way that we could actually repay this debt, right? So with this money finding its way into the markets, and if now what looks like we have a divided government, although we're very anxious to spend more money from both sides, Republicans have not seemingly blinked an eye, and the Democrats are like, okay, let's spend. Everybody's like, all right, let's go. No problem with the current levels of the national debt or the overall debt held to the Fed. In fact, the Fed has no problem keeping rates for what seems like an eternity in the endless supply of stimulus. I mean, what could go wrong in the future? So going into 2021, you have to wonder. You have to take pause just for a moment. Collect yourself. Will the vaccine work? Yeah, I know we're having this weird rollout of the vaccine to start, but I wouldn't expect it to go. Seriously, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of moving parts. I wouldn't expect it necessarily to go totally smoothly right now. There wasn't funding that was, nobody had some thought about funding to begin with. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to give it to the states, and they thought it would maybe misspend it and all. So we're getting the funding now in this latest bill, and there's been some weird things about people ruining vaccines, and there's been discussion about people getting the wrong vaccine. They got the Regeneron treatment, not the vaccine, through an IV, not through a shot. And I know we hear all these weird stories, but the thing is, then we have to ask, okay, will a population of the world be healthy again, back to normal? And what does normal even look like? Do people take the vaccine? All these questions going into 2021, once again saying, oh, I don't know if I can invest at these levels. I don't know if I can invest with all these headwinds. I'm sitting on the sideline. We're going looping all the way back from where we started this show. But you need to write down your goals. What is your goal? If your goal is, hey, I want to have a pile of money. It's going to be no bigger than I have right now. It's okay to see a little bit of inflation eating away at my purchasing power. Then you know what? Leave it in a savings account. If you say, you know what, I'm nervous, I'm concerned, I'm scared, but I want to have financial security in the future, well, maybe you need to venture out a little bit. Because going into 2020, if we see the economy rebound and we see inflation picking up, which I do believe that is the case, your money sitting in the bank is just not going to do it. We've discussed this and how to invest in this particular circumstance over the last few shows. And I'm still holding on to the idea that we're going to see a mean reversion that will take place over the next couple of years between growth and value, and still considering that, hey, we are near peak valuations overall. With all that said, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to just throw out everything. Because we have other things. And I'm now going to give you the other side, and I'm going to hit you on the side of, okay, hold on, slow down. What about the longer term question about once this mortgage forbearance ends or the eviction halts expire and the impact of the migration from city centers play out? And what if the Georgia runoff goes to the Democrats? What's that going to mean to regulatory and taxes and the environment? So on one hand, what I'm doing is asking you to kick the horse. On the other hand, I'm telling you to pull on the reins. Now, the horse will be confused, but probably if you lean forward just a little bit, start moving forward, then lean forward a little bit more. But don't let that horse start galloping necessarily right now if you're not comfortable with it. A little trot, a little walk, a little movement in the right direction. Because you know what? If you, in fact, want to get from point A to point B, but you're pulling back on the reins and kicking at the same time, you're not going anywhere and you're not going to get to your destination. You need a map and you need some kind of transportation. You can't have your left foot walking forward and your right foot walking backwards. Where are you going? You're going in a circle. That's how you make a circle, right? That's how you go around and around. You're going to go in a circle and you're going to dig yourself a hole and you're going to bury yourself in it. That's not what you want. Baby steps, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Listen, I think that there are ways to play this positive and negative potentials. You just need to be selective and look at the agenda of the incoming administration. You need to understand that some of the campaign promises will not be realized. And whether or not you like that Biden's in and Trump is out, or you think that, oh, you know, it's going to change this, or it's going to be a Democratic-led Senate or not, or a split government. Okay, listen, clearly some of the campaign promises that we talk about, they're not all going to happen. And in the Georgia runoff, we don't know. So I think it's important to be set up for all different scenarios. But I believe that if you look at where we are going and the trajectory of what we are on in terms of how this next agenda with a clean and green and possible tax hikes, with the fact that you mix that in with additional stimulus and low rates. And that's not only happening here, it's around the world. And with the potential for recovery, regardless of what administration it is, due to the vaccine that is being rolled out right now, you know, you're set up for some interesting opportunities moving into the next couple of years. Now, I do agree that there are some things that could be problematic. But you know what? No one ever said it's smooth sailing all the time. There are bumps in the road. That's okay. It's not like you drive your car, you hit a bump, and you stop, and you go to the side, I'm not driving anymore. You get past it. You move on. There's plenty of bumps. So with that, I hope I've helped you kind of crystallize a little bit about your goals and your tracking and your commitments, and you're writing it down and giving yourself a fair shot at financial success. And like I said, and I'm going to tell you again, you don't have to do this alone. You can find a professional advisor. You can find someone you know. You can find a friend, a family member, somebody to kind of kick you in the butt and make sure you stay on track. Listen, you may be on a diet, but if you don't step on a scale every once in a while, how do you know what's going on? You don't need to do it every 3 seconds. Maybe you want every couple of 3 days. Have a way of tracking, keeping yourself on track, and making it happen for yourself. With that, I want to wish you and your family a very happy new year, a healthy new year, and a prosperous new year. Stick around. There's going to be a lot more great content. Listen, tell your friends. Shoot them an email. They're going to thank you. Tell them, hey, listen to this guy Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Got some good things to say there. You're the master of your destiny. Write down those goals, and let's get you there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for always being there. Till next week. I'll see you soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.